You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and that was the close of Tales from the 15th Floor by blind composer Michael Stimpson, reflecting on his time in intensive care at Charing Cross Hospital after a life-changing illness. Tales from the 15th Floor will have its UK premiere at a concert celebrating creativity in hospitals to thank the NHS in aid of Horatio's Garden on Friday the 2nd of May at Smith Square in London. I'm delighted to say that Michael joins me now to tell me more about Tales from the 15th Floor and the concert for Horatio's Garden, an organisation and place that is close to Michael's heart. Hello, Michael, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, and thank you for inviting me.
Firstly, Michael, would you mind telling me a bit about your life before the time of the illness that left you unconscious and paralysed in intensive care at Charing Cross Hospital, which I would think was for about 4.5 months at the age of 29?
Yes, that's certainly true. Before that, my actual childhood and student studies were in science, and my first degree was in botany and zoology. But I decided immediately after that to change direction completely and work to become a practicing musician. So in my 20s, it was all a matter of learning to play to the highest level possible, and I was beginning concerts in my instrument, which was classical guitar, round about my mid-20s. And so it was quite a surprise and shock when this illness began. And I'd given a concert just a night or two before. It was actually on Christmas Day that it started. Christmas morning, I lifted a cup of coffee to my mouth, and it missed my face. And I must admit, I felt particularly unwell, having had a really bad dose of flu. And so then began the attempt to try and get into hospital to kind of find out what was going on. So I got into hospital probably 2 or 3 days afterwards, having been turned away from 1 or 2. And then by New Year's evening, I just about could make my way to the hospital window as my body was seizing up, and just rather dramatically collapsed at the window of the hospital on the 10th floor, I guess, lovely views over, and I was hoping to see fireworks and things like that. So I crashed to the floor, and that was it, really. I kind of woke up 4 months later, after the period in intensive care. Although in saying that, I was woken occasionally.
And when we were starting to wake up and come out of it all, I can't imagine what you must have been going through at that time. And I wondered what were the sort of emotions and feelings that you were experiencing at that time, as I suspect knowing that you were alive must have been, I suppose, an overwhelming feeling of relief for you.
Yes, during that time, it wasn't so much relief because it was more a matter of getting through it. They had to put in a tracheotomy or have a tracheotomy, whichever the right terminology is, because the breathing machines, I was going to be there for a long time. And I was woken very occasionally, and we used to communicate through a nurse or doctor starting to say the alphabet, and I would blink at the letter that I wanted to try and build a word. And at some point, I was aware that I had very little eyesight, but there was so much going on that I hadn't really quite registered that my eyesight was going to, that was going to be it for the rest of my life, as it were. But really, the whole experience was marked by intense hallucinations from the morphine that I was being given to take away the pain. And funny enough, I do remember them quite vividly from even jumping out the hospital window and flying up the Thames, skimming it like Batman to go to the theatre of all things. And so they were quite bizarre and very troublesome, I must say. They would go on for what felt like days. But eventually, yes, I was brought to consciousness and actually told I was going to have an operation to insert a tube on the brain because the high pressure, that's what caused the damage to the optic nerve. So there was a gamut of emotions, but actually what I should say is that you become totally hospitalized, and in the end, it became just normal life, as it were. So it was many very strange experiences, from love and care and missing people to just, I need to get through this, really. And there was one particular tough hallucination where, for some reason, Frank Sinatra was trying to kill me. And I know that my parents were called in and told that I probably wouldn't survive. So I've always connected in my mind that that hallucination matched the lowest point of the whole experience.
Wow. Michael, you say that you are aware of two feelings returning from the illness: a wonderful sense of calm and peace of mind, and a driving force to move on. And I can imagine that that feeling of wanting to move on is something that many blind and partially sighted people feel after losing their sight and wanted to carry on with their life. But I wondered about that sense of calm and peace of mind. Where did that come from?
Well, actually, very simply, throughout my 20s, I had suffered from quite extreme panic attacks, and that hospital experience broke them and got rid of them completely. And so I, although I wouldn't recommend it as a way of getting rid of extreme anxiety, it certainly did the job for me. But to give a more serious answer, after coming out of intensive care, one morning or one day, I could suddenly just move my shoulder a tiny bit. And then a couple of weeks later, I could move the top of my arm. And so there began a very long process of gradually my body returning to movement and intense physiotherapy, and learned to stand, and you go through a Zimmer frame and wheelchair and all that sort of stuff. So what I'm kind of getting around to saying is that there was such care and intense expertise that kept me going, and it was just good to be alive, really. And also, while I was in hospital, I saw some people in a lot tougher situations than I was. And so all this contributed to one day I wheeled my wheelchair to meet the social worker, and she said, "Here's your white stick, and do you want to be a piano tuner or telephone operator?" And I didn't really fancy those two things very much, and so decided that once the movement had really started to come back properly, I would try and return to my profession as a musician, really, and a performing musician. But although I did get to the Royal Academy of Music, I found that a tiny bit of tremor in my finger meant that very high-level performance was not going to be possible. And so that's when I began to change direction to writing.
And there are three short movements to Tales from the 15th Floor. The first conveying those dramatic visions that you experience, the quiet and gentle middle section reflecting on the time when your heart was failing, and the third movement inspired, I think, by very vivid hallucinations of Frank Sinatra. Michael, would you be able to, I suppose, briefly tell me how you turned those experiences into the three movements of Tales from the 15th Floor, and how you were able to do it as a blind composer too?
Yes, I'll address the first part of the question in that when writing the piece of music, I tend to work with one particular idea, and I do actually like to work with a contemporary event or a particular poet or author that I may like. And so beginning the piece, yes, I just had this idea that I would make a piece that reflected what I experienced. But even that is quite a, I was going to say dangerous thing, that's overstressing it. But when you listen to a piece of music, you get an idea of what the composer intended, but it's not necessarily the only way of listening to a piece of music. And so I wanted to initially just make it literally that, a piece of music. So then you decide what motifs and what structure you're going to use. And so in a way, the associations are personal to me, but not necessarily to anybody else that is listening to it. So my apologies, I'm not sure if I answered your question then. But in terms of the way I work over the, what would it be, mid-80s, as computers began to speak and software programs were developed, and eventually music software programs enabled me to write in a different way, although I had tried to write with large print and a black felt tip pen, but it didn't really work. So I tend to work with the music extremely enlarged on the computer screen. I can just about get the five lines on the screen with the note heads very large, and the headphones will kind of help to tell me where I am, because it gets very tiring on the eyes. And I did that way of writing for many years, but unfortunately in the last probably 5 to 10 years, I've been losing the last bit of eyesight that I had. And so although I still do write, it's an even slower process than what it was.
And there was one more twist to your musical life, Michael, in 2011, when you were writing your opera, Jesse Owens, and you were informed that you had a very large brain tumour, which you had to be operated on, and that resulted in sadly losing the hearing, I think, in your right ear. And that must have been a big blow for you at the time. But I suspect that sense of wanting to carry on kicked back in again. And also maybe the brain sort of, in a way, learning to adapt and work with the senses that you had.
Yes, that in a way was a tougher experience, not medically, but in general, because I'd been writing the opera for 2 years, and on hearing about the brain tumour and maybe not surviving the operation, I did write every minute of the day, and actually finished it on the Saturday night and went into the hospital on the Monday for the operation. Yes, in a way, it was much more straightforward. I was only in hospital for a week. And when you come out, you've got some spectacular bandages around your head and staples all over the place. But I love that feeling of recovering. And so after a few days, you know, you can just walk a few steps and the next day a few more steps. So it was all very, very easy compared with that first illness. And the sounds are like explosions in your head at first. But, and I remember a cellist came over to play something to me, and it was quite wild. I kept moving the chair back because the sound was so extreme. But it's extraordinary how the brain gradually modifies and adapts. And I even tested out trying to, because you lose directional hearing and a stereo hearing. So I kind of tried to pattern my brain so that the cellos and double basses were down at the bottom right where they would be on an orchestra, even though I wasn't particularly hearing in that ear. And from really now, I would hardly know that I'd got hearing in one ear only, other than the fact that I have to be extremely cautious when I go outside because you don't know which direction a car's coming from.
Gosh, wow. I think it is that thing of that brain sort of readapting and reconfiguring, I think, in many ways, because I remember when my sight was going quite a lot, I've always had bad eyesight, but I remember the sounds was so loud, and I thought, you know, is my hearing going at the same time? But I think it's that thing of the brain sort of compensating and adapting, as you say, which is incredible.
Yes, and I think it also adapts in many different ways, because as you said, I had this drive to move on. And I recently read a book only a week or two ago about the brain. And it struck me that one of the extraordinary things about that original illness was that after I began to think differently, and I began to think much more creatively and in a different way. And I have kind of wondered whether it had a connection. So there are strange things going on which we don't quite understand.
Exactly, exactly. Michael, why did you want to put on this concert celebrating creativity in hospitals to thank the NHS and in aid of Horatio's Garden with the UK premiere of Tales from the 15th Floor, which is on Friday the 2nd of May at Sinfonia Smith Square in London?
Well, the actual answer always really lies in sponsorship, and I was offered some sponsorship for a project, and I decided to earmark that sponsorship for this event. And I thought, well, it would be very nice to thank the NHS that has contributed so much to my life. And although this piece was premiered and toured in Italy almost sort of 20 years ago, it's never had its UK premiere. And so I thought it was a very nice connection to bring it to the UK, but be able to thank the NHS. And so then it was a matter of putting the nuts and bolts together. And in fact, the charity began in the same village as where I live, Horatio's Garden, and the parents of Horatio lived just 200 or 300 metres away. So I was always aware of the charity. And I do love concerts that step outside the norm. You know, if you say, take the norm as you go to a concert hall and you hear a chamber concert. But I think that added value to a concert really does bring it alive, and I think help to keep classical music alive as well. So, yes, the projects get very carefully thought and planned. So I'm very much looking forward to this one, as I've worked with the players before and they are superb.
It does look a really good lineup. And to find out more about the concert and to book your tickets to hear the UK premiere of Tales from the 15th Floor, do visit symphoniasmithssq.org.uk/events/celebrating-creativity-in-hospitals. And you can probably find a link to the concert page by going to the homepage of Sinfonia Smith Square 2. Michael, do you have a website where listeners can go to find out more about you and your music?
Yes, certainly, www.michaelsimpson.co.uk. And there is a whole lot of background, including all the works that have been written and a listen page. And there are 7 CDs now of my work, including those with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, Philharmonia Orchestra and Allegri Quartet. So that website will give all the necessary information.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Michael, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about Tales from the 15th Floor and the concert on the 2nd of May.
It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.